Good afternoon. My name is Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 144th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. We visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Julia Trujillo Luengo. She is originally from Spain and grew up on Gran Canaria, one of the seven Canary Islands. She spoke Spanish at home, German in grade school, and English in school since she was 10 years old. As a high school student, she studied abroad in our very own Auburn, Maine, and then came to college right here at USM. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Julia.
Thank you.
So I thought we'd start back at the Canary Islands. We hear about this, but maybe not so much. I wonder if you can describe for listeners what life is like on the Canary Islands.
So the Canary Islands are seven islands. I was born in Gran Canaria, which is the island that I would say is most populated. There is a large urban center, lots of beaches, lots of mountains, very volcanic, very busy. That's what I find people find most surprising when they go, that they expect a kind of easygoing lifestyle, and it's very much fast paced.
I was surprised that there were over 2 million people on these seven islands.
Yes, and actually my mom's visiting, and we were just talking about the population of the islands, and probably the island I grew up in has over 500,000 people living in it. So we really carry a big load of that, those 2 million that live in the Canaries. It's a fantastic weather year-round, and people move from all over the world just to the Canaries, precisely just because of the weather.
Yeah, and they're, about 50 miles off the coast of Morocco to the west?
Yes.
It kind of reminded me of the Hawaiian Islands to the United States, the Canary Islands.
Yeah, so we're quite far from mainland Spain, and there's very specific initiatives that take place, both stemming from the European Union and Spain, to ensure that we're still connected and we're not as disconnected from the continent at large and the country. But because we're so far away, our accent is different than the rest of Spaniards. Our vocabulary is very similar to the rest of Spain, but we have our own unique features and words, and we have obviously a high influence from the African continent, both in terms of population, having high multicultural diversity, as well as just geographically. Many parts of my island and other islands, you do feel like you're part of, or you're in the African continent.
And yet you're using the euro.
That's right.
Yeah, that's so right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your father's work as an architect and your mother's work as a public servant, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Renewable Energy, kept your family of four on Gran Canaria, though your father's family was from a different island. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about your parents' roles in the community and what that was like for you as a girl.
So I think both my parents, my mom is from mainland Spain, from a very small town, 2 hours west of Madrid, of the capital of Spain. And she comes from a very rural environment, and very kind of isolated environment. And then my dad's from another island next to the island that I was born in. They met in Madrid in college and then had both my brother and I in an island that they didn't know and had no family and not many friends. So growing up in the island, we were very close, and my parents were very intentional parents and influenced us in many ways. My dad, obviously being an architect, has a very creative brain and sensitivity to things that that artists have sensitivity about. And then my mom studied law, but never quite practiced as a lawyer, and got into public service very early on. So that drive to serve the public at large, and the importance of public resources and the accountability of our government is what I kind of got from my mom, and then the creative brain I got from my father.
That's a beautiful hybrid.
Yes.
Right? The best of both worlds.
Served me well.
Yeah. And what other kinds of things did you do as a kid on Gran Canaria? What kind of games do kids play there?
Well, I think the islands, the weather influenced us a lot.
Because you got to be outside.
We got to be outside all the time. So obviously the outside environment, I lived in an apartment complex and I was very close to my neighbor. So we had a common kind of yard. So we were always outside, even though they were 7 years older than I was. And then, of course, the beach and the ocean are very important to island life.
And always close by.
And always close by. And we're with a very good transportation, public transportation system. I was able to go to any beach that I want. I sailed. I attempted to surf. And just the ocean, it's a big part of our lives. And it's something that I love about Portland, too, that I know of a lot of people from the Canary Islands that have moved to other parts of Spain where it's not close to the ocean, and they've had to go back just because of that sensation of isolation, I guess, and lack of oceans. I'm very lucky to be able to go downtown and to still smell that saltiness, goodness that I like.
Hard to believe they're both the Atlantic Ocean.
It is hard to believe, very much.
And did you play soccer growing up?
I did not play soccer because girls do not play soccer very much in Spain. More so now, but when I was growing up, not so much. But I've always had that kind of rebellious heart and loved soccer as a soccer fan. And I still am a very much a soccer fan and try to follow it while I'm here.
And your team is?
My team is Barcelona. I'm a very hardcore Barcelona fan. my dog's name is Messi, so for those soccer fans. My other dog's name was Koeman, which was a very famous soccer player from the Netherlands. So that's a big part of who I am.
Yeah.
Still to this day.
That's great. And then you were brave. As a high school student, you traveled abroad to study and practice English, and that's how you landed in Maine. So what was that experience like for you as a teenager?
So I think because of my, particularly, again, both goes back to my mom's and my dad's roles. My father always wanted me, since I was very young, to come to the U.S. and experience the U.S. immersion culture. And my mom always having a level of excellence due to her upbringing and having to kind of build herself, she wanted me to be highly exposed to English and dominate the language. So they thought that the U.S. was the best place to do so. And when I first came, or I was ready to come, I was supposed to go to New York, and my parents said that's not a good idea because you may be exposed to Spanish speakers. So then a Maine family opted to select me, and that's where I landed, because we didn't know where Maine was. We thought it was really high up there next to Canada.
That's true.
So I came, and they thought I was a strong teenage, that I was going to either sink or swim. It was pretty much that experience. I think in general, I think a lot of other immigrants would agree that I was lucky, because Americans here in Maine are very welcoming in general. So I had a community that was curious, wanted to make me feel comfortable. And even though I was homesick and I had the language barrier, I had a community surrounding me that made me feel special. So,
Yeah, you were at a vulnerable age when you were first a new Mainer.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
But somewhere along the way, you got comfortable.
Yes.
And stayed.
Yeah, so I met my husband now during that exchange program. And then we've been doing the back and forth to the Canaries, to Portland for a good decade until 2008, that we finally, was the last time we came back and we started to settle a bit.
Yeah, we're lucky to have you. So if you're just joining us, welcome. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. My guest today is Julia Trujillo Luengo. She's the director of the Office of Economic Opportunity for the City of Portland ever since May 1st of this year. It's a new job, newly created. I wonder what you can tell us about this new role, Julia, and what's your mission?
So I think the city, like many other cities around the nation, has contemplated having an immigrant integration, an Office of New Americans for some time now. And last year, the city engaged in a comprehensive, I think, stakeholder process to see if that was the best route to take for the city of Portland. I think, unlike other cities, we really have a socioeconomic imperative to attract and retain as many individuals with talent as we can to the city. So I think the city took a strategic position by creating an Office of Economic Opportunity that did not only speak to the immigrant population, but also just the diversity among our races and cultures in the city and how we could bridge that, as well as our youth, to make sure that we were connecting the dots to ensure that at least the people who are here and the talent that is here can remain and Portland can speak to them, so they're not attracted to go to other places around the globe or our country.
Hmm. So how can Portland be home and really fit for all kinds of different people?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
So I see your role as one of a unifier. It seems to me that you're going around to different organizations and threading a necklace, collecting services that have been hatched based on need here and there, and I'm stringing them together into a string of pearls. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think how I have tried to approach my work is that I don't feel I'm the brightest brain in town. So for every need and challenge that when I'm engaging with stakeholders or I'm aware that there are persistent challenges and needs in our city, I have engaged in a process of mapping the existing services, initiatives, projects, momentum that exists in our city and really mapping it out before I'm able to really strategically position the office in what are the unique gaps that exist that the office can absorb within the proper role of the city, and also where can we play a greater role in enhancing or supporting initiatives that need greater visibility, need greater coordination, need the city to be a supporter. So there's many different ways that the office can support the great work that already takes place in Portland.
Yeah, I think in a way many things have come along grassroots, and they didn't have an umbrella. You've come in as an umbrella. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're wisely sitting back and observing how the system works and figuring out how you can add value.
Absolutely. I think an alignment of efforts and a great visibility of the work that is taking place and how we can take it to the next level, it's the most crucial role that I can play where I sit.
And you're looking at some other similar cities, similar size, similar economic backgrounds, and seeing would that program from this city work? You know, are there any examples you can give us of other cities that are doing something kind of progressive or interesting that we might be able to apply over time here?
Sure. So I think how I go about my work in general is that we are a big human family. So it's not a big surprise to me that even though cities like Chicago or St. Louis or Detroit have present different challenges and are broader in size, and we can document the differences greatly. But at the end of the day, most cities are doing very similar work, and that's, I think, speaks to how we as humans behave, how we intersect with each other, how we approach culture. So whether it's the Mosaic Project in St. Louis and the great work that they're doing in terms of connecting professionals, highly skilled professionals, with opportunities across their city, whether it's job shadowing or mentorship or internships, working very closely with the chamber and other cities that are doing great work, like New York City, for example, in terms of opportunity centers that are central hubs that immigrants can go and find out information, or natural helpers programs which is something that attracts me greatly, which is how to recognize those natural leaders that are in communities and are doing great work, and also require maybe further training to give them that extra support for their next opportunity. And I think for me, I'm really attracted to work that is intergenerational, that works with the communities at large, and that highlight our human value altogether.
You have your work cut out for you.
I do. Don't you?
Your job is to attract people to Portland and keep people in Portland. You've talked about the fact that there's a sense of urgency right now. Can you say more about that? What's the urgency that you're seeing?
Sure. I think the urgency is that as many of maybe our listeners know, that we have a demographic challenge ahead of us, and that we need to retain every single individual with talent and with interest in being here in Portland, because we're going to have a significant population gap.
Yeah, being that we have an old state.
That's right.
We need people to help care
for
and go ahead and be the tax carriers.
Right? Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So in that regard, that's part of the urgency from a socioeconomic perspective, but also from a basic life value. We have many individuals here that are barely meeting their needs, and when we're talking about the immigrant community, that is very much palpable in that community. So we have no time to waste to do a better job at connecting the dots, to take a proactive role at the city to make sure that our residents have as many opportunities as they can in order to live a happy and productive life here in the city.
Do you have any examples of this kind of person that you're thinking of, an immigrant that comes in with skills and isn't able to give at the level, at their highest level, and what keeps them from that and how we can work with that?
Well, I think it's a multi-layered, complex challenge. I think there is a lack of awareness in general of credentials, say, globally. I think there's great work that needs to take place at the employer level, at the private sector level, as well as the higher ed. What are those two systems can do to narrow the gap? And what can I do to help support that? And I think that the city at large, we have, as immigration integration continues to take shape, I think we will have greater opportunity, especially for the highly skilled professionals. And of course, if you're a highly skilled professional, but your English proficiency is not quite there, say somebody like my mother, who was a very successful professional but does not speak English, how can we contextualize English in a different way and English acquisition? And how can we customize as much as we can in order to meet those unique needs of that great talent that is here that we don't have to acquire from away?
I see those people all the time.
Yes.
You know, people with fantastic careers, leaders of everything from symphonies to businesses and politics. And then they come and they're working in hotels. And
yeah, and I think the other component that the office could play a role is in injecting intentional inspiration there. That I think for me it's very important to holistically, not only just your everyday productivity in the traditional role in the economic spectrum, but also as a human being, as a resident in the city, that you can feed your soul in many different ways. So I think for someone like a highly skilled professional, it's very important to feed that, because it's common that I know we get into that cycle and it's difficult to continue on with life in a meaningful way.
It can be very depressing.
When so much has been taken away from you.
Yeah. Go from being a physician to not being able to buy your groceries and have questions.
Isn't it incredible how much that is part of your identity? And then when that's taken away, you really are faced with a very shocking realization of how much that means to you in your own journey of life, and how can we regain that?
So that's where you're looking at doing some more immersion and speed English to get people up to speed quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's brilliant. Who would reach out for you in your new role, and how would they reach you as the director of the Office of Economic Opportunity for the City of Portland?
So right now, because I was hired recently in May, I still don't have a website, and we're working and vamping all that in the fall. Probably early September, there will be a greater infrastructure for people to reach me. Right now, just my telephone or my email. I'm located right at City Hall. And in the fall, I plan to launch some open doors kind of hours for 2 hours a week. My plan is to host the open doors 1 week in my office and then solicit other meetings or initiatives or partnerships or communities that have an interest in me going there. So I can bridge that gap and I can hear from as many people as possible.
Yeah, really doing a lot of outreach.
Yes.
It's probably exhausting. So if all goes well in your endeavor to embrace diversity using other cities' models along the way, what will success look like in Portland in 5 years, in your opinion?
I think how I would define success mostly is through looking at the basic systems that bring us economic prosperity, and seeing that there is a variety of races and cultures represented in those systems at multiple levels. So whether you were looking at the workforce system, seeing that we don't just overpopulate entry-level positions, but that we have succeeded across the board, even if it's not in huge percentages, but at least to see the needle move. Someone, I've been involved in this kind of work for a number of years, and I think a lot of us who have been working in this are ready to move that needle. I think in other ways that I would also consider success is seeing ways that that global talent can be more visible in the city, leading initiatives and being part of citywide initiatives that right now we're not so part of. So how can we really do what you were explaining earlier and just really build that necklace with as many different pearls as possible, and that it doesn't take a lot of research to see Portland as a global city, as a city of multiple faces and multiple ways that Portland can speak to me and to others.
So your job is to make sure that we're seeing diversity on our boards, diversity in our community think tanks, diversity in hiring positions of all kinds.
Diversity in our city staff and workforce, diversity in our creative economy.
And keeping our youth around.
Exactly.
Just a little bonus on top. You're supposed to make sure the youth stick around.
Particularly when over half of our student population in Portland Public Schools is already self-identify as non-white. So,
yeah, we have a different Portland coming our way.
Absolutely.
And you're here to shape it. Julia, you are a natural leader, bright, organized, passionate, and you're uniquely qualified as someone who is both knowledgeable about the state of Maine and someone who's lived the immigrant experience here in this state. So thank you so much for your service and for taking the time away from your young family to be with me here today.
Thank you, Kay, for having me, and thank you for offering this great opportunity to all of us immigrants to showcase that we have a diverse voice.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Thank you.
Send more people my way. And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com, or for related information, visit facebook.com/newmainerspeak. Julia, as we close, would you be willing to introduce the song you've selected today?
Sure. So I selected this song, Corazón Partido, which is Broken Heart by Alejandro Sanz. And the reason I chose it was because in the immigrant experience, we are caught in that catch 22 where we no longer quite belong where we come from. We don't quite belong here, and it's that broken heart that we have to face for the rest of our lives. So
thank you.
Algo queda entre nosotros dos, que en tu habitación nunca sale el sol, ni existe el tiempo ni el dolor. Llévame si quieres a perder a ningún destino sin ningún porqué. Ya lo sé, mi corazón que no ve, es corazón que no siente, corazón que te miente, amor. Más profundo de mi alma sigue aquel dolor por creer en ti, que fue de la ilusión y de lo bello que es vivir. ¿Para qué me curaste cuando estaba herido si hoy me dejas de nuevo el corazón partido? ¿Y quién me va a entregar sus emociones? ¿Quién me va a pedir que nunca la abandone? ¿Quién me tapará esta noche si hace frío? ¿Quién me va a curar el corazón partido? Compartir sino dar limosna, amor. Si no lo sabes tú, te...
te lo digo yo. Después de la tormenta siempre llega la calma, pero sé que después de ti no hay nada. Nada que me curaste cuando estaba herido, si hoy me dejas de nuevo el corazón partido. ¿Y quién me va a entregar sus emociones? ¿Quién me va a pedir que nunca la abandone? ¿Quién me tapará esta noche si hace frío? ¿Quién me va a curar el corazón partido? ¿Quién llenará de primaveras este enero? ¿Y bajará la luna para que juguemos? Dime si tú te vas, dime cariño mío. ¿Quién me va a curar el corazón partido?